All right, as I put myself together here, good morning again. Thank you all for joining us, those of you who are watching online, and for the handful of you faithful who I've seen every week, thank you for being here as well. I was sharing this with a friend of mine. It's nothing like going 12, 13 weeks and like preaching to an practically empty church building. You know, you kind of, it's like, man, even if people were maybe dozing off in the corner or asleep, so it'd be better than just hearing my voice bouncing off the walls. I say that only to say I'm looking so forward to all of us being able to come together, getting creative in how we're going to go about coming back and gathering together again. But you really, what they say, absence makes the heart grow fonder. Like, I definitely miss seeing everyone here on Sunday morning. So thank you anyway for logging in and being a part of this family that gathers here. We're going to talk a little bit today about something that has become a bit of a topic in the Craig household. We're going to talk a little bit about chores. Chores, and I'll tell you why in just a second here. We're going to talk about chores because one of the things that has emerged in our household with us being in this kind of shelter-in-place, stay-at-home, limited contact with the world is that it's been nothing but me and my wife and the kids and the dog and the cat and the fish. Like, it's just us in the house, right? And so some of the things we normally would not allow, we've been allowing, which is my son spends a lot more time playing video games, and my daughter spends a lot more time on YouTube watching videos and singing lots and lots of songs. You're going to, trust me, when we all come back in here, you're going to hear a lot of Kendall in the back singing really loud. She's really been warming up her pipes. We noticed on our way back from visiting family this past weekend that Kendall has gotten better. Her range has expanded. She's been in the car, and it's like, wow, this is impressive. But that's all that just sitting at home, like nothing, like nonstop all day long, singing songs, right? But what happens with my son in particular is that he has found out that, unlike YouTube, video games are not free. Add-ons are not free. You know, he plays Fortnite. Tokens are not free, right? And so he's like, you know what? I want to earn some money. I want to earn some money because I want to be able to enjoy this newfound life that I'm experiencing where I go to class for a couple hours a day, and then the rest of the time I get to play on my Nintendo Switch or my PlayStation or something. But he wants to enjoy it, and he's interacting with his friends. It's been great. But with those chores, because I told him, I said, you know, this stuff isn't cheap. This stuff isn't free. So he wants to earn this. And yet, when it comes time to do the work, he's willing to do it, but, you know, he doesn't have that same energy and enthusiasm. And sometimes, when it comes to our walk with God, we do. We want the benefits of the love of Christ. We want the peace that comes with knowing that we are forgiven of our sin. We want all of these things, but when that list of chores gets handed out, suddenly it's a little bit different. And I want to get into this today because we have a responsibility as Christians. And I want to talk about this as it relates to this new normal that we are in the midst of and that we're all kind of learning together. This new normal, not only in the way that we interact with one another in the church, but also the new normal of what it is that God is doing all across the world. How can we relate this to our faith, to our walk with God, to how it is that we as believers should treat one another? The title I've given today's sermon is We Are Not Okay. Now, there's two reasons for this. One is because, full disclosure, today, I'll let him pass. Today, I'm not okay. I'm just letting you know right now, I'm tired. I'm a little bit exhausted. This is kind of typical. And I'll explain why in just a second. But what's interesting, I thought about this too, because we had that little technical difficulty last week where we ended up not having the ability to stream the worship service. There was a problem. And I talked to Marcos. He said he's going to make it up to us. He apologized profusely. But it was kind of out of our hands. So not only was I out of town and able to relax last week, so I've got all this extra energy, but we didn't even have service online or in person last week. So I got nothing but time. Like, buckle up. Okay, I'm going to make up for it. No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to go double today. But Kay's like, no, please don't. But when I say I'm not okay, there's two sides to this. I'm not okay because of so much that has happened over the past few months. It's starting to take its toll on me. There's a lot of people who are saying the same thing. I'm not okay. Like, I get it, and I understand we have to be distant from one another. I understand that businesses are closed. But I'm not okay. This is finally, it's finally, a lot of people have reached their breaking point. Anybody with eyes who hasn't been asleep has seen on TV. So much has been going on. Cities all across this country where people are rioting, people are protesting. Then you have people who are destroying things and looting. And guess what? It's not okay. There are a lot of people who are just frankly not okay. We are not okay as a society. And yet, the response so often, because we're tired, we're fatigued, we're frustrated, we got our own personal issues, we don't really want to deal with what we're not okay with. We kind of just want to, you know, bury our head in the sand. But as Christians, we have to respond to what's not okay. Part of the new normal. Part of us as a church has to be a willingness to say, it's not okay, but I'll do something. I was talking about these chores. This, by the way, this is my son. This is the guy who's decided he wants to do all this stuff around the house and make all this money. We had this conversation. I was explaining to him. He said, first time he asked me this, now my son's 11. He comes up to me, this was about a week and a half ago. He says, Daddy, I have a question. I said, what? He said, how much do they pay you to preach? I said, well, are you interested in becoming a preacher or something? He said, no, I just want to know how much money you have. I was like, well, I said, actually, that's kind of complicated because I don't just preach. I do other things, too. I make money in different streams of income, and your mom makes money, so we have money. Yeah, but I just want to know how much so I can know how much to ask for. I said, well, that's not how it works, son. You actually get paid based on your investment. You get paid on how much work you do. Now, interestingly enough, this is my daughter, who she's not nearly as interested in chores and making money right now, but she has figured out, because her birthday was just a few weeks ago, she's figured out, my friend William Montgomery, he told me this. He told me this was going to happen. She's figured out, I can just get money from Grandma Shanita and Grandma Lee and Miss Jeannie, and they're going to give me money, and I'm going to collect all this money for my birthday and Christmas, think Grandma and Grandpa are going to give me money. And then Daddy's still going to buy me stuff without me ever having to go to my piggy bank. She comes to me last night. She says, hey, I found 78 cents. You didn't find 78 cents. You went and you got 78 cents that probably most of it was my change. And now you're going to keep it. And then we're going to go to the store. She's never going to spend her money because I'm going to buy her stuff, right? She's kind of figured out a way around this. But going back to my son, he has this thing where he wants to buy these games. Fortnite, he has this thing called V-Bucks. So he texts me yesterday. He says, hey, I'm willing to do the work. And I said, well, I wasn't there at the time. I was out. And so I said, go ask your mom. And so his mom went ahead and gave him $10. And then he loads up on all this different stuff. Now, the thing is, he comes to me. He says, hey, I want to do something. If I take out the trash, is that worth $10? I said, well, son, one of these days I'll explain to you how ashamed my dad would be of me if he knew that I was giving you money for any of these chores, right? Like, we didn't get money for chores. Like, no, you clean up your room, you wash the dishes, and we let you eat. We let you sleep here. You know, you live here rent-free. But the thing is, he wants to do these things. And funny story, I don't know if I told this before, but this was back right as spring came along. We were grooming, and doing some manicuring around the house and around the church. And I had to go out and do the first cut of the year. And I'm out cutting the grass. So my wife says, hey, William, you want to earn some money? This is in the beginning of the shutdown. So he was still kind of enthusiastic and learning this money thing. And she's like, you want to earn some money? Come out here and help. Well, what do we need to do? Pick up sticks so Daddy doesn't have to run over them with the mower. Pick up the big ones. You don't have to worry about the little twig. Just pick up the big ones so Daddy doesn't run over them with the mower. He's like, okay. Well, he gets out there, and he's walking around like this. Oh, he's just tore up about it. And, I mean, he, you know, Kendall, she's meanwhile, she's got, like, more sticks than she can handle, you know, and they're piling these sticks up. And William's got, like, three, you know. He doesn't want to actually do the work. And so we had to talk about it. And then he got better because he understood, I'm going to give you this money. I'm going to, you know, do what I said I'm going to do. But this is not acceptable work. You can't go out here and do the, you know, pick up four twigs and say, hey, I did what I was going to do. And then do it with a bad attitude. And we look at that and you think, man, he's got a lot to learn, right? Yeah, but as Christians, we have a lot to learn too. We have a lot that we really need to consider when we look at the new normal, because when we look and we think, well, what's wrong with the church? Why is it with so much unrest and uncertainty and fear and people who are lost? Why is it that churches are still struggling to have an impact on the world? Why are so few people turning to God during this time? And this is a moment of introspection where we have to ask ourselves, are we okay? Are we actually willing to do the work? It starts with first us cleaning up ourselves. I want to look in Genesis chapter 35, starting in verse 1. You see here, and we're going to talk about Jacob a little bit today. It says, then God said to Jacob, go up to Bethel and settle there, and build an altar there to God who appeared to you when you were fleeing from your brother Esau. So Jacob said to his household and to all who were with him, get rid of the foreign gods you have with you and purify yourselves and change your clothes. Then come, let us go up to Bethel where I will build an altar to God who answered me the day of my distress and who has been with me wherever I have gone. So they gave Jacob all the foreign gods they had and the rings in their ears, and Jacob buried them under the oak at Shechem. Then they set out, and the terror of God fell on the towns all around them so that no one pursued them. Jacob and all the people with him came to Luz, that is Bethel, in the land of Canaan. There he built an altar, and he called the place El Bethel, because it was there that God revealed himself to him when he was fleeing from his brother. Now, this story, just to give a little background, Jacob is in a whole totally new place in his life. And he's gone through a lot of changes. He's fled his brother, who he deceived and took his birthright. At this point, he fled and left Laban, who he now has both Laban's daughters and all of Laban's grandchildren, and he runs away. Jacob was an uneven person. And I think if we're all honest, spiritually, we're all uneven a little bit too, right? For all of the righteousness and all of the faith that we have, we've got some shortcomings too. I know I do. And so we can identify with the fact that Jacob is now coming back to this place. He's revisiting not only this physical place, but he is also revisiting his history. He's revisiting many of the things that he experienced in the past. And this portion starts out with God's like, hey, no, go build this altar, and I want you to sacrifice, because this marks a new time for you. Jacob's name would later be changed. We'll talk about that a little bit later, probably next week. But it starts out where he says, go clean yourself out. Go clean yourself up, change your clothes, In other versions, other translations, it says consecrate yourselves. And we're going to talk about consecrating ourselves next week. But he says, go clean yourself up. Go fix yourself up. You and your family, Jacob says, we're going to go wash ourselves. Consecration is this thing where you basically say, you know, I'm going to get rid of this stuff that is hindering me, that's holding me down, that's dirty. When they were taking their earrings off and they were getting rid of all this jewelry, it wasn't like, you know, they were going to go pawn it or something. What's happening is these are things that represented a kind of a wink and a nod at other idols and other gods. And they were saying, no, get rid of all this moral filth. Get rid of all these things because we're going into a new place and we can't go into that place unclean. We can't go into this new stage unclean with all these other attachments that we have to the world around us. We see here that as they're preparing to go into this new place, this new normal for them, it requires that we clean ourselves up on a heart level. Consecration and cleaning yourself up is not just going and taking a bath and brushing your teeth, but it's a heart thing. He understands that his heart has to be different, that they can't have a heart that is one foot in the church and the work and the mission that God has for your life and one foot out here chasing the world and all that's in it. There's a devotion that comes with this consecration that's expected. But what I want to do now is getting back to this whole we're not okay thing. It's important that we understand what it means to consecrate yourself and clean yourself up. But I want to go back to this thing, and I want to look at what happens right before we get to this place in the story with Jacob and cleaning up his family, because this speaks to where we are and why it is that Jacob had to clean up his act, why it was so important that he get himself together. You know, this is a picture of a family, right? I don't know these people. It's just something I found on the internet. This is another picture of a family. I don't know these people either. I don't even know if they're real family. They could be models. I don't know what this is. Here's another picture of a family. They're not familiar to me at all. There's literally, I can go countless. And I'm saying this only because as I was talking about my children earlier, we all have families. We all have things that we care about, right? We all have children or wives or grandparents or mothers or people that we care about. And even though we may, you know, as we've been doing social distancing and cleaning our hands and wearing masks, they talk about how you wear the mask out of love and concern for others, not necessarily for yourself. And the thing is, the reason why many of us have gone through the different things we've gone through, the extents we've gone through, is because of our family, people that we love. People that we care about. Again, I don't know these people. This is not my family, but they look like they love each other. You know, I look at these people right here, and guess what? They have a boy and a girl. I don't know how old they are. I just know that I have a boy and a girl too. I can identify with them in that way. We can all identify with the reason why we need to clean ourselves up. Why did, you know, Jacob, he said no. It wasn't just something he was going to do. He wasn't just building this altar so he can go and worship and devote himself to God, but he brought his family along with him, the people that he cared about. Who are the people that you care about the most? Who are the people that matter to you the most? How you are willing to do things for those people or not, that actually indicates how much you love them. Because we can say a lot of things and we can be dutiful and responsible, but what are you actually willing to do for the people that you say that you love? Again, not my family. Don't know these people. Matter of fact, didn't I show this one before? Is this a repeat slide? Sorry. Let's look at this passage here in Genesis 34. This happens right before you get to where he is consecrating himself and he's bringing his whole family in. We see a story here, and in the interest of time, I'm not going to read through the whole chapter in 34, but we're going to get to the end here. We're going to see something that's pretty gruesome. pretty rough. It says, 3 days later, while all of them were still in pain, two of Jacob's sons, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took their sword and attacked the unsuspecting city, killing every male. They put Hamor and his son Shechem to the sword and took Dinah from Shechem's house and left. The sons of Jacob came upon the dead bodies and looted the city where their sister had been defiled. They seized their flocks and herds and donkeys and everything else of theirs in the city and out in the fields. They carried off all their wealth and all their women and children, taking as plunder everything in the houses. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have brought trouble on me by making me obnoxious to the Canaanites and Perizzites, the people living in this land. We are few in number, and if they join forces against me and attack me, I and my household will be destroyed." But they replied, "Should he have treated our sister like a prostitute?" Now, again, I didn't read through the whole chapter in the interest of time. This is what I want us to focus on. But in context, I want us to understand what happens. Jacob has two wives. And it's well chronicled. One of them, he loved her a whole lot. That was Rachel. And then the other one, he loved her a bit less. And he was kind of reluctant, but he got tricked into it, and he had to take her. And that's another story for another day. And that was Leah, right? So Leah has these children, okay? And he's responsible. He's taking care of. He has a relationship with these children. But these are not the children from the wife that he loved, because she struggled to have children, whereas Leah had a lot of children. She was able to give birth, and she thought, "Well, if I just have his man's children, maybe he'll love me more too." And it didn't work out that way. We're going to talk about that here in a second. The point is, these are Leah's children. And so what happens is, these two boys, their sister, Dinah, their sister, because they're nomadic, they're moving into this new place, she builds a relationship with some of the other ladies, some of the other girls, her peers. She builds a relationship with these people. And so her and some of the girls just go, and they're not doing anything wrong. They're just going out, and they're just doing, I guess, what girls do. And so this group of foreigners sees Dinah, decides, "You know what? I like her." This one guy, he said, "I like her." He tells his dad, "Make her my wife." So then he takes her, sleeps with her. That's when, so when they say defiled her, that's what they're talking about. Takes her, defiles her, and then comes back later and goes to Jacob and says, "Hey, man," you know, the dad's like, "Look, had a little mix-up here, had a little problem. My son, no big deal. He just slept with your virgin daughter against her will. So let's make this right. And why don't you just give your daughter to me in marriage, and we can all come together and live as one big happy community, and you know, you can give your daughters to my sons, and I can give my daughters to your sons, and we'll just make this all work out, right? We'll just live in harmony. We'll do business together, all these things." And Jacob's response was fairly muted. He was upset by it, but he didn't say much. In fact, he didn't even tell his sons immediately. He says, "You know what? I'll wait until they come back in, you know, from out doing their work, because I don't want to cause any problems here." And when the sons found out, they were furious. And you would think, yeah, that's kind of a normal reaction when your sister gets raped. When your sister is sexually assaulted, you would think that her brothers would be furious. You would actually think that her father would be furious as well. But notice his response that we just read. Because what happens is, basically, the brothers decided, "You know what, Dad, we're going to handle this. We'll take care of this." So they say, "Here's what we're going to do." They come up with this plan. "We'll go ahead and agree with you that we're going to intermingle together, and we're just going to be one big old happy community. But actually, there's a requirement that we have. All of your men have to go get circumcised." All your men have to get circumcised because that's just the thing that God will not allow us to do. You got to get circumcised. So all the men in this neighboring group of people, all of them go get circumcised. And needless to say, adult men, when they get circumcised back then without the enhancements of modern medicine, it was painful. They needed a little time for that fever to break. You know, it wasn't something easy. So they go get circumcised, and while they're still recovering, they're still weak, while all the men are down, instead of waiting for this and agreeing, the brothers had already devised this plan, and they just said, oh, no, we're going to pay you back. We're going to pay you back for what you did. And so by third day, when they were still trying to recover, they go in and lay waste to all these people. So you got a bad situation with this woman who's been sexually assaulted from some neighboring community, and then you have it made worse by the fact that her brothers decide, we're just going to lay waste and just take all the plunder and pillage and take all of them. We're going to do this. And so what happens is, remember how we just read in chapter 35 where it says that, you know, God struck fear in all the people around. See, Jacob is saying, wait a minute. You're messing this up for me. You know, I've been running from Laban and running from Esau, and I'm just trying to have good relationships with people at this point. I don't want any trouble. What you've done has now made me an annoyance. You've made my house. And you think, do you not care about the injustice that was done to your own daughter? Or the fact that your sons actually went out here and murdered? You're looking at this as though it's an inconvenience. You're looking at this as though it's some, you know, trivial thing. Like, it's you're looking at it from your perspective and how it affects you instead of seeing the larger impact in all of this. His response was not one of, I want my daughter to be vindicated. I want justice for her. It wasn't even a, you know what, I understand that, you know, my sons, they felt they had to do something, and because I didn't fill in that void of leadership, I didn't step in, they did something. No, his response was, what about me? You see, I raise this because as Christians, very often we can look at society and they're burning up trucks and they're fighting and people are looting, and then you got protests and there's rubber bullets and tear gas and COVID-19 and everybody's sick. And businesses are shut down as a result. And we look at it and it's like, well, what about me? What about mine? How's this going to affect me? We don't want to raise any waves. We don't want to cause any trouble. But this is part of that unevenness that had to be reconciled in Jacob's life. And in the same way, us as Christians, we have to be able to reconcile this. Conviction about injustice leads to more than just emotions and rhetoric. It involves acts. It involves actual actions. See, Jacob didn't want to raise any waves. He didn't want to cause any problems. He didn't want it to affect business. He didn't want it to affect his reputation. He said, man, I've been, you know, running around here, people for decades now. I kind of enjoy this comfort. I don't want any problems. And he was blinded to the fact that this is exactly what you're supposed to be doing. This is why I've chosen you, Jacob, to call these things out, to stand up for me, to be my representative, to show the world who your God is. We have to, as Christians, understand that part of this new normal that we're engaging in means that, guess what? We don't get to just sit here and be comfortable and be on the sidelines. And just, you know, I talked about this last year, thoughts and prayers. We don't get to just give thoughts and prayers. We have to do something. I found this example to be so just packed and layered because we, you know, like I said, unless you've been, like, you know, asleep for a week, you've seen the footage of the police and this man in Minnesota. You've seen how he died. You can't get away from it. It causes triggers in me. I don't want to see it, but you almost can't avoid it. It's everywhere. In the past few days, you've seen these protests. Peaceful protests that turn into riots and turn into burning and turn into shooting and turn into hundreds of people getting arrested all over in these different cities. We cannot avoid these things as Christians. If we want to know why it is that the church isn't having the impact, you know, a friend of mine, he pointed out, he said, you know, I'm just waiting for the preachers to get up and start talking about all the peaceful things that we need to be doing. When is somebody going to actually stand up and say, no, we got to do something more than just have some candlelight vigil? We got to do something more. Not just the preachers, but Christians as a whole, because too many of us are silent. And we look at it and we think, well, you know what? Well, that doesn't really affect me. That's not really my cause. I'm not an activist. That's your brother. That's your sister. Do you actually believe that? Or is that just something that we say that we're all brothers and sisters in God's sight? Do we really believe that? You know, I found this interesting. As we've been talking about COVID-19, somebody was telling me how, they said it's amazing how all this stuff is working together at the same time. And it's like this toxic brew of just confusion and chaos. If there's two things you've heard me say over the past 12, 13 weeks over and over again, is that we have an opportunity as a church, and we have to prepare ourselves for something different. We cannot continue to do the same thing. God is giving us an opportunity. Are we seizing on the opportunity? You know, this is people protesting. I don't even know what city this is in. George Floyd's life matters. Guess what? You don't even have to agree or disagree on that to know that people are in pain. They're hurting. People want to get caught up in the details and minutiae and the politics and the social parts of this. And we fail to realize that because we as Christians are unwilling to engage with our own neighbors, our own friends, our own people, that the church loses its credibility every time we are not willing to engage. That's why I brought up that example about this is Jacob's daughter. This wasn't some stranger. This just wasn't somebody he knew. This just wasn't somebody in his city where he lived. This is his own daughter. Do we have the attitude that says, I'm willing to do something different, even if it comes at risk to me? You know, these are people open California. And I've heard people on the left and people who are of more liberal mind say, we just need to stay shut down as long as it takes. Do you understand the impact, the anxiety, the frustration that people are facing because they've lost their business? It doesn't matter what's right or what's wrong. Jacob couldn't go back and fix his daughter's sexual assault. I can't bring Mr. Floyd's life back. I can't go back and fix those things. But what does Christ expect of me to do? Because it's got to be more than just thoughts and prayers and sitting around. You know, we pray together as a family. This is what we are expected to do as a church family. I want to look at one last thing here as we finish up about these expectations that God has of us. Look over in Esther chapter 4. Many of us know this story. Esther chapter 4. Hathach went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. Then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, all the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that they be put to death unless the king extends the gold scepter to spare to them and spares their lives. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king. When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer. Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this? Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai. Go, gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. Some of us need to be Mordecai in this very moment that we're having right now. Some of us need to be willing to speak up, challenge our brothers and sisters to have a voice, to be active. But some of us look here at Esther, and we know this story well. We understand what happens. Esther is taken. She knows what happened to the queen before her. She understands all the ramifications of breaking the law. She knows that her husband is crazy. She knows all the risks that are involved, all the things that could happen. And she says, you know what? I don't want no problems. I don't want any smoke. See, her husband, the king, they don't know that she's Jewish as well. She has concealed this secret. And Mordecai says, guess what? I have news for you. You're comfortable right now. You've survived to this point, and there have been no consequences. There have been no repercussions. But guess what? God's going to deliver us because God is faithful. But what's going to happen to you if you're not willing to carry out his will for you? He says, oh, by the way, who's to say that the only reason you're the queen? And who's to say that the only reason you survived this long and nobody found out that you're actually a Jew is for a time just like this? This is that opportunity. As a church, this is the opportunity. We want people to come to Jesus. We want growth. We want people to understand who Christ is and what he expects of us. But are we willing to put ourselves at risk to do it? Are we willing to step up to the plate and do it? Our new normal will require that we be willing to risk more than our comfort and time. Guess what? There's a risk involved in calling out police brutality. There's a risk involved in calling out racism. There's a risk involved in calling out misogyny. There's a risk involved in calling out all types of things in society. And for people who are wondering, why is there such a decline in the church? Why are so few young people, millennials, Generation X and Z, and all these other letters they have for these generations, why are there so few people responding to the gospel, to the call? It's because so many of us want to stay in our comfort zone. We don't want to mess up business. We don't want to have any problems. We don't want to lose the relationship we have in our family. I have a friend of mine named Jan. Jan was sharing a story with me the other day, and she was talking about her dad. She was telling this story about how when she was younger, she was a kid, and her dad had two friends, two black guys, this is a white lady, two black guys who were his friends, and they come over to his house and they're shooting pool down the basement or whatever it was. So, and this was, again, this is probably like back in the 60s or 70s. So friends come over to shoot and pull, and it's getting raucous. I mean, they're really getting at it, right? And her dad's losing, and she says she was happy he was losing. She wanted him to get his comeuppance, I guess. And so a few minutes later, there's a knock on the door because the neighbors who saw the two black guys show up to the house, a few minutes later, they hear her dad screaming. So they called the cops, thinking that her dad was in distress, because two black men walked in there and suddenly her dad is downstairs in the basement screaming. And she said afterwards they had, it was this long conversation that he had with her and her siblings, and he's talking about how we can't live this way. We have to get over our bigotry and our racism in this society. But then she goes on to say that while that was a moving and challenging and heart-wrenching conversation, she says, you know, some years later, her dad became a law enforcement officer. And she says she noticed that he changed. That the very same racism and bigotry that he had a problem with, that he called out, that he challenged the kids on, that the longer he spent time in law enforcement, the more and more cynical he was towards people of color. The more and more he looked at them and said, well, yeah, but they are just criminals. And why do they act that way? And why can't they do better? She said it was hurtful. It was difficult. It was difficult for her to deal with this. My other friend, his name is Michael. I went to school with him in high school. He talks about his dad. And he says, you know what? I appreciate it. Yeah, we understand that all law enforcement is not bad. That the vast majority of them are not bad. The problem is, when you don't call out the bad apples, guess what? You're a part of the problem. He talked about his own family. He said, I come from a long family, a long line of law enforcement officers, and we just have to stop trying to ignore it and say, well, you know, but there's only a few bad ones and the rest of them are good. He said, I can't tell you how many times I heard the N-word in my house and in my family. And he said, I love my dad, and I love my uncles, I love my brothers, I love all these other people in law enforcement, but I saw it, I heard it, I witnessed it. There's a risk for calling these things out. There's rejection that comes with it. There's hurt. It could even risk your own life. The problem with the church is we don't want to be activists. We don't want to go out there and protest, and we don't want to be marching and holding up signs. And then that's fine. Guess what? COVID-19, my friend Peter Bernie, he said this morning, he said, guess what? I guess so COVID-19 is over now because all these crowds and people not social distancing, I guess they don't care anymore. I get the memo, right? Like, no, I would not recommend anybody go out and protest no matter how unjust this was. But you can't just stand there and do nothing and claim Christ at the same time. Part of this new normal, if we want people to come to Christ, we have to talk about things and show things that are relevant, and our lives have to be representative of it. This I found so fascinating. I'll finish here. This was, I believe, in, I want to say it was in Minnesota. These people, as you can probably tell by their appearance, these people are Amish. Okay? And this is so odd because they're some form of Amish. But the point is, it's so odd because people thought it was so odd. Like, Amish people, generally speaking, don't even deal with the media or don't even stay up on things. Think, the Amish are actually out here protesting. They're like, look, we're tired of seeing it. We're tired of hearing the excuses for black men being killed, for people being shot up in their homes, and nobody has to be held accountable. The Amish are actually out taking a stand. I'm not saying that the Amish don't stand for anything. I'm saying the Amish, generally speaking, don't say a whole lot. I see them around here all the time. I see, you know, Mennonites and different ones. They kind of stay to themselves. When the Amish are actually out protesting on the side of the road, what does that say about the rest of us who call ourselves in the image of Christ? I found this interesting also. This is in London, England. This is in London, England. People protesting, people speaking up, people saying it's not okay. It is not okay to harbor racism and resentment and bigotry. And it's not only not okay for me, but I'm not going to watch it happen. These are people in London, England. I only bring this up to say, what do you have to say about what's going on right around you? What do you have to say about members of this church who are being affected by this? I am not okay because I've actually suffered abuse at the hands of police officers. It's been nonstop triggers for me. This has actually worked for me today. There are other members of this congregation who have triggers. When it comes to COVID-19, I've been so grateful, and I pray about this all the time, how grateful I am that nobody in our number has been taken out by this. Not only because many of us have been healthy or we have the ability to practice social distancing, but even those who've been impacted financially because their work has been changed, they can work from home. Or some people don't have to make compromises, or if they do have compromises that have to be made, they had enough saved. Or the bottom line is, as a church, as a congregation right here in Dover, we have been minimally impacted by COVID-19. But for such a time as this, we have to speak up. We have to get engaged. We have to get involved. We can't just sit idly by and say, oh, well, this is great, because that makes us just like Esther. Well, it isn't affecting me, and I'm cool. I'm in the, you know, castle, and things are okay. Meanwhile, Mordecai is saying to us, they are killing your brothers and sisters. They are plotting. People are sick. People are dying out here. What are you going to do? Because when they say that to us, what they're really saying is, how is your Jesus real if you will not speak up? I want to close here. Normally, I would end with some questions, but instead, I'm going to end with a list of chores. Because just like William, my son, who's named after me, even though we don't share this likeness, but just like William wants to get the money, you got to be willing to do the work. And so I want to give us a list of chores to close out with here. The first one is reach out to someone that is being impacted in a direct way by COVID-19 and social unrest and listen to them. If it's a law enforcement officer, if it's somebody who maybe has recently gone through a murder, somebody who has been unjustly prisoned or punished or whatever it is, somebody who's being affected by COVID-19. See, we haven't had a whole lot of direct problems with this, but trust me, you know somebody. Even if they haven't gotten sick, you know somebody who's lost their job, whose business is folded. If you need a list, hey, listen, I can give you about 50 of them right here in Kent County. I can give you tons of people that you can talk to and listen to them. You don't have to even know what to say. I don't know what to say. I don't know how to talk to them. You don't have to talk. Just listen. But be willing to engage with people who are being impacted by what's going on around you. Because we are insulated, we can't have a reaction that it's out of sight and out of mind. The second thing is create a personal action plan for how you will respond to people who are upset, even if they are not totally in the right. It's very easy to say, well, those people are out there, you know, looting and throwing stuff at police. And I don't agree with the way they treated police officers. I don't agree that they should attack them in this way. They didn't do anything. Or, you know, it's wrong for you to walk around. You know, people are making a big deal about the mask and making it some political thing. Whether you feel like they're totally in the right or not, come up with a way in which you're going to respond to them the way that Jesus would respond to them. That may be confrontational. That may be loving. That may be, hey, you know what? Can I pray for you about this thing? Do you mind if we pray together now? But come up with an action plan on how you're going to respond rather than just walking away, because walking away is an ineffective and, as a Christian, an irresponsible response in every situation. There are times when you need to respond. The third thing is begin praying about certain attachments that you will have to part with moving forward. Confess and initiate dialogue about these things with others in your faith circle as preparation. Guess what? When the churches open back up and they've come up with a vaccine and people aren't running around here scared and sick, the impact of social injustice, the impact of COVID-19 is not going to stop. And you're not going to stop encountering people who have been impacted by this. Like I told you, I have scars dating decades. And every time I see certain things on TV, it bothers me. Every time I hear certain things on the radio, it bothers me. It still impacts me to this day. if we are going to approach this new normal the right way, we have to have the heart and the attitude to say, I am willing. I am absolutely willing to get rid of those things that are holding me back. My creature comforts, my personal comforts, my family comforts, my financial comforts, whatever it is that is holding you back. That is what we see that is so important about Jacob and his response to going into a new normal and a new place. Again, we're going to talk about this more extensively next week. But pray about these attachments that we have, these comforts that we have, and our reluctance to let them go. And finally, commit to being an example of justice and righteousness. Become aware of opportunities God is giving you to speak up. It does not take much to have an impact. One of the things I've always found funny about the story of Esther is how Mordecai gets all the credit and the praise, and they throw him this big old parade, and he's great and everything because of what he did. But it was actually what Esther did that made the difference. Esther was the linchpin in all of this. Nobody may ever know your name or the impact that you're going to have, but it is still incumbent upon you to do what you're called to do by God, doing your part. Are we looking for those opportunities to be the Christians that God wants us to be, or are we chasing comfort and non-confrontation?